Listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded July 15th, 2026. Well, while Julius Caesar was never warned to beware the Ides of his namesake month, the present-day pretenders to power would do well to take heed. There's treachery afoot and portentous things roiling, threatening the comfort of far-off kings and czars, and even that for the emperor's seat. It's dark days indeed, more befitting Halloween than the dog days. Even the universal luminescence brought by news Saturday of the suspiciously timely demise of Lindsey Graham, emissary of darkness itself, is eclipsed Monday by the ascension of another Graham, a sister, to sit in Lindsey's place, as he has no wife or husband, to do as the law of South Carolina allows. That last begging a continuity of the late and lightly lamented's ill-meaning agenda. John Helmer's the principal behind the news and analysis website Dances with Bears. An author, journalist, and educator, John spent decades living in and reporting on Russia. His academic career includes teaching at Harvard and serving as political advisor to presidents and prime ministers from Washington, D.C. to Athens, Greece. Helmer's book titles include The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, Long Live Novichok, The British Poison Which Fooled the World, and Sovcom Plot, How Pirates Tried to Capture the Treasure of the Russian Seas and Were Caught Out. His latest at Dances with Bears is Bleeding to Death is Not a Russian Option. Today, an extended visit with Guerrilla Radio's most often appearing and favored guest, Dr. John Helmer. Welcome back to the show, John.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Good to be back.
Well, it's always my pleasure, of course. Now, John, between my pre-recorded intro yesterday and today, you've posted a more recent article at Dances with Bears about murder and honor these days, raises doubts about the late Lindsey Graham's demise narrative. What, John, is the popular account failing to account for?
What appeared in Russia in a publication known as Tsargrad. Tsargrad is a nationalist, semi-oppositionist platform for urging the president to increase the role of the church, increase the level of military action against the Ukraine, and so on. That's its basic function, plus a certain amount of sensationalism in reporting everything. It ran a story basically suggesting, and this came from the United States, there are quite a few so-called podcasters who've raised the issue, as well as I understand General Kellogg's daughter has raised the issue of there being a Russian trace, a Russian cause in Senator Lindsey Graham's death on Saturday night. And in the Russian version of it, basically the claim was made that after the death, it turns out they've calculated there wasn't enough time for Graham to leave his meetings with Zelensky in Kiev, catch the train to Poland, catch a plane back to Washington, D.C., get off the plane and die. The argument was that Graham had been killed by a Russian missile strike on the Skyfall drone factory. That's a drone factory which in Kiev area, which Zelensky had invited Graham to tour with him, and there are ample photographs of that visit on Friday morning. There was then a meeting that Graham had with Zelensky. Zelensky then went on to other business and ultimately flew to Paris for the Bastille Day celebrations, in which Ukrainian troops marched down Champs-Élysées, something that no one should ever forget the French president has done. In any event, the claim was that Graham had died and been extricated from Kiev, and the theory or evidence or claims that he had died of an aorta dissection or rupture of the aorta, bleeding to death internally, heart attack caused by that sequence of events, that had all been fabricated to cover up a Russian assassination. In fact, if you go back to two kinds of evidence. One, the evidence at the Kiev end, and then the evidence at the Washington end. This is false. There was a tour by Zelensky, Lindsey Graham. Clearly, then, the two of them survived because Zelensky survived, And there was a Russian missile attack on Friday night against that facility. By then, there is enough time for Graham to have taken the train to Rzeszów, the major Polish hub, transportation hub, supplying Ukraine with materiel and taking casualties out and so forth. There was enough time for him to take the train to Poland and a plane from Poland to Washington. There was then a few hour period of about several hours, exactly how many isn't clear, for him to have gone from airport to his home and then to have died. A couple of extra points. My colleagues and sources in the journalist community in Washington, in and around Washington, say that there's indisputable evidence of the help called to for ambulance and medics from the Graham's house to the dispatcher. There is an ambulance medic crew to testify that they attempted to revive him. They couldn't. There is hospital evidence, and there is the published evidence or claims from the medical examiner or coroner in Washington, D.C., of the cause of death on an interim basis pending toxicological and other analysis. In addition, President Trump has made the point publicly that Graham's father also died of a similar heart attack process, aorta rupture, that there is a genetic strain of hardening arteriosclerosis, hardening of the arteries, that Graham said Trump didn't take enough care of his diet or his medical condition to head off the slow accumulation that damages the arterial system and caused this disease. There isn't enough.
Are you saying that Trump is giving health advice to people now?
Well, you're talking about a man who describes himself as in superb physical and medical condition and neurological condition, who just in case takes brain scans every 6 months. Yes, he's actually explaining that he understands the medical sequence that led to Graham's death.
Well, so John, is the Tsargrad report then just bunk?
Correct, bunk. No story, but an attempt to make it look as if the Russians had successfully assassinated Graham in a decapitation strike intended for Zelensky. Well, Zelensky survived perfectly well. Graham survived. Then the question is how long it took on the train, probably a bit less than 11 hours. What kind of aircraft took Graham? It was almost certainly a dedicated United States Air Force transport, a military transport, especially assigned to him. That would have speeded up the flight time. And there's no claim at the Washington end that Graham had spent more than 2, 3, 4, 5 hours on the ground before he had his heart attack or aorta rupture, leading to internal breathing. Yes.
Yeah. Well, now the attack on the Skyfall drone factory, that did happen. It was advertised when I first read about it as this secret location factory and everything. Did they know that Zelensky might be there, or is it just a coincidence, do you think?
I don't think there are too many coincidences in major security operations surrounding a move by Zelensky around Kiev or around the battlefield. Exactly what Russian military intelligence knows of the locations of the drone factories and the drone storage points and the drone distribution system, I'm not in a position to say. Clearly, what the Russian side has been doing is to try to combat the significant escalation of US, NATO, guided, planned, targeted campaign against Russia's refineries, Russia's food exports, and so on. All of this is happening. There is an effective damage being inflicted on Russia, and consequently, there's a rising dissatisfaction accelerated by and accentuated by the election campaign, which comes to the national poll in September 1820. And so Zagrad is attempting to raise the issue of what, with what effectiveness Russia, General Staff, the Kremlin, are dealing with this rising disruption and threat to the Russian economy, to the normality of the economy, which President Putin has been promising to deliver since the beginning of the special military operation. The normality of the economy is in fact why we have a special military operation and not what the Kremlin is ready to call a war. And so combating the drone, the escalation of drone war, and mitigating the threats that are emerging in the agricultural sector, shipping sector, transportation sector, and key arteries of the Russian economy, all of that's part of a controversy, a political controversy that Zagrad is weighing in on. So it, in a certain sense, you could say there's a political purpose in the propaganda that the Russians effectively struck at a major drone factory that was hitherto secret, and that they killed a major U.S. leader of the war against Russia, the author, so-called, of the new Back to the Stone Age sanctions bill. This is part of a domestic Russian confidence building against the loss of confidence caused by the drone war.
Well, John, you talk about there being a need for a change of tactics for the Russians. It seems Zagrad is insinuating that the Russians have disregarded their own foreign minister and have decided that they will assassinate leaders. They try, in this case, then saying that they tried to assassinate Zelensky and as well with Graham. Does that add up?
I don't believe there was an assassination attempt on Friday night. I don't believe that Zagrad's editorializing has changed President Putin's policy, which is to prohibit, restrict, and ban the general staff from a policy, a targeting policy of decapitation. The record shows that President Putin promised Naftali Bennett, then an ex-prime minister of Israel, now a current contender for the new, in the new Israeli election, to be prime minister and succeed Prime Minister Netanyahu. Putin told Naftali Bennett early in the war. I believe the date would have been late in 2022, but I'm not sure whether it was early 2023, that decapitation was not a Russian policy. In other words, and this gets back to the Putin's magic mirror, Putin has consistently limited the tactics, the targeting, and the military objectives to the political constraint he has imposed on military planning that would encourage what he believed would be President Trump's commitment to achieving a political settlement that would end the war and give Russia the security guarantees it needs in Europe without escalation beyond the kind of demonstration effects and the advance of Russian forces on the ground along the front. That combination President Putin has been committed to. He's been promising, therefore, not to escalate. He's been promising to escalate only to match or mirror what the Ukrainian side does. And he's also instructed his representatives, like Foreign Minister Lavrov, or his special whisperer for United States policy, Kirill Dmitriev, to emphasize the positive about Trump's commitment to long-term security for Russia. This is increasingly spitting against the wind. The wind clearly indicates Trump's commitment to the policy of the G7, which Trump signed in June in France, and then the NATO declaration, which Trump agreed to and endorsed in Ankara a few days back. And that's a policy of increasing the pressure on the Russian economy, damaging the Russian economy at the front, in the hinterland, on the near seas, and on the high seas. That policy is an escalatory one, and Russia is not able to match it. not able to mirror it. Instead, Putin keeps hoping and saying he can compensate Russian citizens, the Russian economy, for the damage, and continue to try to negotiate. And in the meantime, describe what's happening as a pattern of pure terrorism, which is Lavrov's phrase, and combat it with what Putin called publicly precise mirroring with more powerful effects. That's the policy, and it's that's the promise to the Russian voters, and it's a promise that's failing to assure that the skies are free and safe, that the gas tank of the car will be filled at a price drivers can afford, that farmers can put diesel in their harvesters to begin to collect the harvest, that the wheat doesn't overflow the storages but can be exported through the Sea of Azov, and so forth and so on. All of these assurances, the structure of President Putin's rule, in fact, based on an oligarch-driven, oligarch-controlled and dominant economy with state guidance and limitations on oligarch profiteering, that system, that structure, that economic structure is breaking down now under the pressure calculated to break it. Mm-hmm. And that pressure calculated to break it is a U.S. strategy, a U.S. empire strategy, which Trump is entirely committed to.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today to John Helmer. John's the principal behind the web news and analysis site Dances with Bears. He's an author, journalist, and educator, and he spent decades living in and reporting on Russia. His academic credentials include teaching at Harvard and serving as political advisor to presidents and prime ministers from Washington to Athens. His book titles include, but certainly aren't limited to, The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, Long Live Novichok, The British Poison Which Fooled the World, Sovcom Plot, How Pirates Tried to Capture the Treasure of the Russian Seas and Were Caught Out. His latest article at Dances with Bears is about murder and honor these days. We're talking in and around that, and we'll get to his second most recent article, Bleeding to Death is Not a Russian Option. I don't want to, John, leave Lindsay just yet. I'm probably the only one. But there is a proxy being appointed into the Senate in his place, his sister, as is customary in South Carolina, that if a sitting senator dies, his spouse or her spouse can take their place. In Lindsay's case, he had neither husband nor wife, and so his sister is filling the boots. It would be maybe unremarkable, but her first vote was only hours later. And as she voted on this upcoming or proposed legislation to allow Israel and the American militaries to amalgamate to some degree, I'm not so clear about the details. I'm presuming that she will also vote in Lindsay's sponsored bill, that its name hasn't quite solidified just yet, and it's been rumored that it's going to be changed anyway to the Lindsey Graham was a great guy bill. But up till now, the working title has been Sanctioning Russia Act of 2025. John, what is this bill? Is anything more than the sanctions that Russia has suffered these last many years since 22 and before?
Well, I'm a bit disabled as a Russia correspondent to talk about the details of the Washington legislative process here, Chris. Mm-hmm. And I beg the pardon of our Canadian audience, that I'm really the, you audience, you folks listening, are kind of closer to Washington than I am. However, let me try and say a couple of things. One is that whatever way Graham died, there is a serious question: does his disappearance make any difference? And there are two ways of thinking about this. In the first place, he was the chairman of the Senate Budget Committee with high seniority and the capacity to hold the Democrats in the minority for the time being, and perhaps past the election, the November 3 election, they will stay in a minority, but a narrow minority. He was able to create a coalition behind his violent, warmongering policies the destruction of Iran, the destruction of Russia, the destruction of Cuba, and the advancement of the U.S. empire on all fronts at an increasing cost imposed on U.S. allies. That caricature is what he stood for, and he was able to implement that effectively as a, in Senate, U.S. Senate political terms, tactical terms, administrative terms, through his budget committee chairmanship and his seniority, and the extent to which he was liked and befriended by the different elements of the Republican Senate caucus and the Democrats. That's missing now, and he can't, that can't be replaced. However, there's an argument, I've seen analysis, that the initial round of votes since his death have limited the degree to which the new defense authorization legislation he'd been piloting allow the level of integration with Israel and U.S. armed forces and intelligence services that's been proposed. So I'm not sure his disappearance has made no difference. I'm not sure it's made some difference. I can't tell at this stage of the vote process for the sanctions bill what's happening to the Israel integration elements of the bill. First. Second, I'm unable to determine when I look at the versions of the bill that began with a 500% penalty tariff on countries that trade with Russia, that began with the Graham bill as drafted last year, how much of the 500% has been negotiated away in order to preserve White House support and Democratic Party support in the Senate. I've seen different reports, one that cuts the penalty tariff from 500% to 400%. That's, practically speaking, not much difference. I've seen other reports that the sanctions are 100% penalty, not 400%. It still makes no difference. So to get to your question, Chris, and to enable Canadian audience to think through the implications for Canada, what we've got here is an attempt to limit by legislation the discretion that the president, whether it's Trump or anyone else, seeks always to maintain for executive power to manage relations country by country, so that the tariff penalty power can be exercised aggressively against an enemy country that might be an ally, like Canada or Russia or China or India or Turkey. The issue here is not whether it's 100% penalty or 500%. That means a total trade cutoff with a designated target country. The number doesn't matter. The exercise of power between the legislature and the president, that's at stake in this bill. And I can't see a new bill as it's going through the Senate process and then the House process. I can't see how much discretion the Congress is taking away from Trump so that he can't modify his handling of each country, country by country. That affects Canada. That affects India, which is the principal target here of the so-called secondary sanctions. You're quite right, Chris. This is repeating the power that Trump has already exercised to punish any country, starting with India, that buys oil from Lukoil and Rosneft, the two major Russian exporters of oil. That has been used to attack India. It's been suspended in effect against China, as China countered with its own tariff penalties that hurt the United States market. The extent to which the bill would enlarge the congressional control of the process and make it irreversible for the president, that's so far undecided, as I understood from reading, which our audience can do just as well as I can. I do recommend reading from time to time, not simply listening to podcasts. that's been the major stumbling block between Trump and Graham, between Graham and the Republican majority and the Democrats, and between the Senate and the executive. The stumbling block is how much discretion the president would retain, how much power the president would retain to modify particular countries in this use of the tariff weapon as a weapon of war. That's the issue that they couldn't decide. That's the issue which Graham announced had been settled shortly before he died. Whether his votes cast for the time being until there's a by-election by his sister, by a robot, or by his successor in a by-election, that's less important than the issue of whether the Republican majority holds the Democratic minority against a potentially hostile White House, which wants to retain its power and not have its power taken by the legislature in this case. That's the issue that Graham was more skilled at managing. And without him, you have less skill, more dissension, more controversy. So I've seen colleagues in the press and friends saying, yes, Graham's removal makes a big difference to the ability of the Senate and the Republican Party and Trump to agree on this. I've seen contrary views. So I'm simply unable to give a good answer. On the other hand, why we're discussing this is it means it affects Canada. Can Canada remake its foreign policy, its attempts to defend its sovereignty, its trade options with China is the principal objective for Canada at the moment. But secondarily, down the track, Russia and Europe, can Canada be more exposed to Trump threats or less exposed as this bill goes through the legislative process? And right now, I think we have to say we don't know.
The Europeans have certainly been using Russian origin oil and gas, although circuitously. We'll talk about that, John, perhaps after the break, but we're going to take a brief break right now and come back with John Helmer and talk a little bit more about the portents of beyond Lindsey Graham's sudden demise, all things Russia. Stay tuned for that. When nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favorite uncle that's taken you for walks in the park, however, that he's really a serial abuser.
You need a different source. Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every Thursday and Saturday.
Francisco was born in the moments before the bloodbath that became the Civil War. Most of his family fled to the north. As a teenager, he set forth. Spent a year kidnapped by men who he hoped he'd never see again. He got out by any means that he could, just as any other human being would. Like his namesake, he wasn't trying to find. Fortune was not on his mind. And Oregon soon was known to his neighbors as a fighter for day laborers to organize for their rights as human beings. Believing despite all the things they say in D.C., no one is illegal in any country. And he has only served the people, no matter what they say. Francisco is our neighbor, and our neighbor consequences in kind for being the sword who could not turn a blind eye on injustice, on suffering. He saw among workers all over the city, no doubt among anyone, he was targeted. And when ICE came, he was deported. He didn't wait to be shot dead. He came back to organize instead. And he